We talked about the difference between the rapture and the second coming. We're not going to, you know, go through this, but just keep in mind that the rapture is when Jesus comes in the air, and the second coming is when he comes back to earth. Okay, so there's a big difference between the two.
Welcome to Anchored in Jesus, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder of the Pittsburgh Institute of Biblical Studies, author, and senior pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. This is Sonia Hall, thanking you for joining us today for the conclusion of the Rapture, Part 3. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the conclusion of the Rapture, Part 3.
Was the one who started teaching the Rapture, and then Schofield was the one who popularized it when he put it in his Bible. And so they argue that, well, you know, you don't really hear about any rapture teaching until Darby and Schofield. But again, saints, I've just shown you that that's a lie. That's not true. The rapture has always been present. You know, it's always been around. Even though it was suppressed at one point by church leadership that didn't accept the rapture, they suppressed it, but yet and still, it was still there. It never went away. It's just that it didn't have the prominence at certain times that it always had. So I wanted to give you that because, again, as I teach on the rapture, everybody doesn't believe that there's going to be a rapture. Okay, so you know, that's the first thing I want you to know. So I don't want you to be out there, you know, thinking that just because somebody is a Christian and or say they love the Lord, that they're going to believe like you believe and believe that there's a rapture. So I want to let you know that there's probably a good majority of people out there, Christians, that don't believe the rapture. So again, that's the reason that I taught the history of the rapture. All right. Now, what about date setting and the rapture? What about date setting and the rapture? You know, there, I remember, and some of you may remember this, there was a book, and I got it somewhere. It's in my library somewhere. I just didn't pull it up. The title of the book is 88 Reasons Why Jesus is Coming Back in 1988. All right. And that was a pretty popular book back in the day. So guess what happened when Jesus didn't come back in 1988? They said, well, he's coming back in 1989. And then he didn't come back in 1989. So what did they say? You know, many people, like the Jehovah Witnesses, say he came back spiritually, right? That he might not have came back physically or literally, but he came back spiritually. So, you know, again, once you start promoting that narrative that he's coming back, or, you know, and there's people today, you know, that say they know exactly when Jesus is coming back. And so they try to, you know, give a time. And then when he don't come back, because the Jehovah Witnesses, who was it, Russell, you know, he believed that Jesus was coming back. And then when Jesus didn't come back, he said that, well, he came back spiritually, right? So again, you know, you have to continue to promote that narrative. So, you know, I would say this, you know, if somebody tells you that they know when Jesus is coming back, then, you know, I would stop listening to them because they're a false prophet, right? Because look what Jesus said in Matthew 24 and verse 36. But of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Jesus said, no one knows. And in one place, he said, not even the Son. So I think I talked about that last week, when Jesus came on this earth, that there were times that he chose not to know things. You know, he submitted his omniscience to the Father. And again, he didn't stop being God. You know, it's just like if you're a millionaire, right? And you got millions of dollars in the bank. If it's just say, well, you know, you're going out and you're buying a car, and just say you buy, and I'm just throwing this out. Just say you buy a hoopty, right, for $100. Well, you know, you could have bought a top of the line car, Why? Because you got $1 million. You know, I mean, you're a millionaire. You got millions of dollars in the bank. But what did you do? You chose not to use. You chose not to use it, right? You know, you could have, but you chose not to. And so that's the same way with Jesus. When it says it's not that Jesus was ignorant. You know, it says that when he says that he didn't know when he was coming back, that was just something that he submitted to the Father. And that was something that he chose not to know, right? It means that he didn't know it. It means that he chose not to know it. Just like if you bought that car, it didn't mean that you can't go out and buy a top of the line car. It means that you just chose to buy another car. So, you know, again, when it says that Jesus didn't know, you know, it means that he chose not to know. And so now somebody will ask, well, what about now? I would say now he knows. When he walked on this earth, you know, he chose not to know. But now he's in heaven, you know, I believe that Jesus knows when he's coming back, right? That him and the Father already got this thing worked out. And one day the Father is going to turn to him and going to say, it's time. And Jesus is coming back. Maybe morning, maybe noon, maybe evening, maybe soon. Coming again. Coming again. Oh, what a wonderful day it will be. Jesus is coming again. He is coming again. In Matthew 24, 42 through 44, watch therefore, for you do not know the hour your Lord comes. But know this, if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would have not suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man cometh. All right, so we are commanded to be watchful. My professor, Dr. Ed Heinsohn, you can catch him if you get some of the religious channels. He has a program. I recommend that you watch it. It's called The King is Coming, and it's a prophetic program. But Dr. Heinsohn, one of my professors when I was in seminary, I love what he says. He says, don't waste your time trying to guess the time. Jesus could come at any time, so you need to be ready all the time. Somebody ought to be shouting on that one right there. All right. Don't waste your time trying to guess the time. Jesus could come at any time, so you need to be ready all the time. All right. You need to be ready all the time. So as far as date setting in the rapture, that is not something that should be done. And if somebody tells you that they know when, again, I say write them off as a false prophet. Okay, let's look at the time of the rapture. Let's look at the time of the rapture. So we have pre-trib. Okay, let me just go through them. Pre-trib, mid-trib, partial raptures, post-trib, and then pre-wrath. So let's look at the time of the rapture. Now, I would consider myself a pre-trib, pre-tribulation. And what that means is that Jesus will come back before the tribulation starts. So you see that little house there on the left? That's the church, right? The church, and we right now we are in the church age, right? That's, I believe it started on the day of Pentecost. We are in the church age. So what is the next, according to pre-tribulation, what is the next event on God's calendar? The next event on God's calendar is the rapture, right? Where God snatches us out of this earth. And then once that happens, what takes place on earth? The tribulation, 7-year tribulation. And then we'll be in heaven for those 7 years. And then at the end of the tribulation, Christ will return. Now you have before you and I just want to say that I put a lot of work into these notes, and so you have a pretty detailed explanation of these events, and also what you have is the biblical support. So, you know, where is the biblical support for a pre-tribulation rapture. You know, you see all those points that I have after that, right? All the points. And you know, a couple of the key ones, and I like this one right here. You know, Jesus is coming back for his bride, right? He's coming back for his bride. And if the church had to go through the tribulation, you know, what kind of groom would he be? You know, think about that. If there's a tribulation that's coming, what kind of groom would Jesus be if he let his bride get beat up and get judged if he let him go through the tribulation? So Jesus is coming back to take his bride off of this earth so that we don't have to go through the tribulation. Now, you know, another thing that's very interesting, and again, you have all those scriptures there. You can read them, and if anybody wants to challenge you on pre-tribulation rapture, you got all those verses right there. But the other thing I like, in Revelation, the book of Revelation, chapters 1-4, all we read about is what? The church, the church, the church, the church, the church, the church. In Revelation 19, the church shows up again when Jesus comes back with the saints. We start reading about the church, the church, the church. In Revelation 4-19, guess what's not mentioned? One time. You got it. The church, right? Revelation 2-3, the church at Ephesus, the church at Smyrna, the church at Sardis, the church at Thyatira, the church at Philippi. Man, you got all this talking about is the church. And after Revelation 4, you don't read, as somebody would say, a cotton-picking word about the church, right? You don't read anything about the church until Revelation 19. So where is the church at during the tribulation, where it talks about the bowl judgments, the seal judgments, the trumpet judgments, when it's talking about all those trumpets, hell taking place here on earth, right? The church is gone. So that's why, you know, I would promote, and I believe in a pre-tribulation rapture. I believe that we're getting out of here. And as I heard somebody say, and you heard me say it, I'm not looking for the undertaker. I'm looking for the upper taker. So definitely there is strong evidence in the Bible for a pre-tribulation rapture. Now, the next one is called a mid-tribulation rapture. And it believes that the church will go through half of the tribulation and then be raptured out and then come back with Christ when he returns back to earth. So the church will end up going through half of the tribulation. And you know, again, because I know somebody will ask me, well, where do they find that out? Where do they find that in the Bible? So in your notes, I have four different scriptures that they use to show that the church will go through the through part of the tribulation. All right, so that's called the mid-tribulation rapture. And then there's what's called the partial tribulation rapture. And what this says is only those who are living right and looking for his coming will go. So when he comes, if you caught up in some kind of sin, you know, if you are fornicating or you are drunk or you are caught up in some immoral sin, then you're not going to go. Even though you're a Christian, you're not going to go. Only those who are living right and looking for his coming will go. But then he'll come back again. He'll give you another chance, right? And if you're living right, then you'll go with him. If you're not, you're going to stay here. So this is what's known as the partial rapture theory, that he's only going to take those who are looking for his coming, who are ready to receive him. All right. And then this one right here makes no sense to me. this is the post-tribulation. And it's saying that the church will go through the tribulation. And at the end, they will be raptured out. But it's almost like, you know, you get raptured out, then you just you turn right around and come back, right? So, you know, this one, you know, right here, but this is one that has been taught throughout throughout the years, a post-tribulation rapture. Again, it says that the church will go all the way through the tribulation and then at the end be taken out, and then Christ will come back. So, you know, again, that one doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me anyways. And then this is a new one here. When I say new, I mean it's come out within the last 20 or 30 years. And that is the pre-wrath rapture, that believes that the church will go through the tribulation, but at toward the end of the tribulation is when God releases all hell on earth. That's when, you know, you got the bold judgments where, you know, people's skin is burning off their flesh, and, you know, you got the waters being turned to blood, the moon and all that darkened. You have sores, people dealing with sores. I mean, you know, it's just a terrible time, and it's called God's wrath. And so so this view says that the church will go through the tribulation until God's wrath, when it just comes to a point where it's heightened, and God is, again, all hell is breaking out on earth. And then that's when God will take the church out. But up until then, they'll go through the tribulation. So these are the different, you talk about the rapture, these are the different times. Again, there's pre-tribulation, which I believe, you know, I got to say this, I always joke with y'all, right? I said, you know, you can believe some of these other ones, or you can believe like your pastor and be right, or believe some of the other ones and be wrong. There's pre-tribulation, mid-tribulation, partial, post-tribulation, and then pre-wrath rapture. So those are the times of the rapture. Now, as I close today, we see that throughout scripture, God calls his people to examine prophecy and let it be a motivating principle for godly living, godly and righteous living. That as we look at prophecy, somebody will say, oh, I don't want to study prophecy. You know, that's that pie in the sky by and by. I need something to help me live right now, right? So some people, they just shun prophecy. They throw it off, right? But God says that we should study prophecy and let that be a motivation for godly and righteous living. And do you know this? 1/3 of the Bible. Now, you say that you love the Bible, right? 1/3 of the Bible deals with Bible prophecy. 1/3 of the Bible deals with it. So I don't see how we can just choose to say, well, you know, I'm not concerned about prophecy. It's not going to put food on my table. It's not going to help me pay my bills. And some people feel that way. And, you know, I understand. But if God put it in there, we need to study it. That's my philosophy. You know, we can't cherry pick. You know, we can't pick and choose what we want to study. So it's in there, and it should motivate us for godly living. Look what Peter in 2 Peter 3:11, after describing a great prophetic event, the destruction of the heavens, Peter said this: seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in all holy conversation and godliness? Peter says, seeing that these things are going to happen, how is that motivating you to live a holy and godly life? That's what you need to be thinking about, as to what, how am I living my life in light of the fact that Jesus is coming back, right? And so I ask the question, how should you live? In light of prophecy, how should you live? All right, and we looked at this last week. You should watch and pray. You should be prayerful, you know, that you're looking for the upper taker and not the undertaker. We should be reminded of the rapture every time we take communion. I talked about that last week. We should encourage one another, Hebrews 10:25. Let me give you these last two thoughts. We should comfort one another. You know, I went to a home going today. And as I was at the home going, the person that passed away knew the Lord. And when we think, I'm looking up a verse right now, 1 Thessalonians Let me pull that out, Saints. 1 Thessalonians 4. Now, the verse is up there on the screen, but I wanted to read something that comes before that. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Look what he says here. But I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning those who are asleep or those who have died, that you sorrow not, even as others that have no hope. It says, for if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so them who are asleep or who have died, he will bring back with them. So what is the blessed hope? The blessed hope is that Jesus is coming back. The blessed hope is that we're going to see our loved ones again in Christ. You know, your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, oh, even that child that passed away, you're going to see them again, right? And so Paul said, comfort one another with these things, for the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel and the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. So shall we ever be with the Lord. Wherefore, comfort one another with these words. Saints, what a blessing. Now, I know that when a loved one dies, at first we might not want to hear they're in hell, you know, well, you know, I need them right here. You know, I'm going to miss them. And so we might get a little huffy because we want them with us. But when you get that huffiness out, look at this. You're going to see your loved one again, right? And it says comfort one another with these words. I tell you what, man, I don't know about you, but I'm comforted by the fact that I'm going to see my mother again, my mom. I'm comforted by the fact that I'm going to see her again, that, you know, I know that she knew the Lord. And when I close my eyes in death, I want to see Jesus. He's the first one that I want to see. And then I think one of the second ones I want to see is my mom, right? And just, you know, talk with her a little bit. And that brings me comfort. You know, I don't have a lot of comfort knowing that I'm not going to see my mother again, but there's great comfort in knowing that I'm going to see her. And so she's going to come back with Jesus at the rapture, you know, because she got to get her body. Her body has to be caught up and transformed. So she's coming back. Her spirit, her soul is coming back with Jesus at the rapture. And she's going to get her body back, transformed, immortal, incorruptible. All right. And then we should walk victoriously in this world. What manner of person ought you to be? How should you live? For the grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Looking for the blessed hope. Let that sink in. Looking for the blessed hope and the glorious appearing of our great God, our Savior, Jesus Christ. Notice what he says before he says the appearance. He says that we should deny ungodliness. We should deny worldly lusts. We should live soberly. We should live righteously, and we should live godly. That means we should live victorious in this world in light of the fact that Jesus is coming again. Maybe morning, maybe noon, maybe evening, maybe soon. Coming again, coming again. Oh, what a wonderful day it will be. Jesus is coming again.
Thank you for joining us today on Encourt and Jesus. Tune in next time for the first half of The Judgment Seat of Christ, Part 1. If you would like to request an audio copy of today's message, The Rapture, Part 3, you can contact us at encourtandjesus.org and request The Rapture, Part 3. That's encourtandjesus.org and request The Rapture, Part 3 from our Bible Prophecy Series. Or call us at 877-831-5060. Keep in mind, the entire series on Bible prophecy is made available by request. When you visit our website, encourtandjesus.org, you can view many of the other teachings by Dr. Glaze. Dr. Glaze is the author of 10 books. For more information about these resources and how to order, visit encourtandjesus.org. www.incurtinjesus.org or call 877-831-5060. We also invite you to like us on Facebook at Incurt in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, incurtinjesus.org, or send it to Incurt in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. Once again, that website is incurtinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Incurt in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts that we remain on the air. Our title, Incurt in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. Now for Dr. Glaze and our volunteer staff, I'm Sonia Hall reminding you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.